follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Hours after targeting two American destroyers in the Red Sea and at the same location where the sunken British ship Ruby Mar was attacked, the spokesman for the Yemeni army stated that they had successfully targeted the American cargo ship True Confidence in the Gulf of Aden with naval missiles, causing the ship to catch fire.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a targeting operation against the American ship in the Gulf of Aden with a number of suitable naval missiles. The hit was accurate thanks to God, which led to the fire breaking out on it. The targeting operation came after the ship's crew rejected warning messages from the Yemeni naval forces.
Officials suggest that the U.S. claims of the loss of lives come within the Western narrative and could be a fabrication to justify larger aggression against Sana'a and to garner international support against Yemeni naval operations.
Since 2015, we have been facing the American-backed Saudi aggression, and in all our military operations, we have not targeted any civilians, and this is an honorable history for our armed forces. Regarding the deaths of civilians in the attack on the American ship, this news comes within the American narrative. This news may be fabricated to escalate attacks against Yemeni territory. We are prepared for confrontation in all its forms, and our naval operations will escalate whenever the Western attack escalates, whether against our brothers in Gaza or against Yemeni territory.
U.S. officials reported that three of the ship's crew members were killed while others were critically injured.
Observers state that the Yemeni army's latest operation substantiates that the threats of escalating naval operations were not mere media propaganda. Moreover, they assert that the Yemeni army has already begun deploying unexpected weaponry, catching the U.S. Navy off guard and leading to the failure to protect its vessels. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
War on Gaza continues unabated. Israel is pressing ahead with its systematic move to dehumanize the entire population of the Gaza Strip and destroy all aspects of life in the besieged territory. Piles of rubbish and solid waste are now a normal scene in Gaza's streets after Israeli forces targeted all parts of civil life in Gaza, including the municipalities, where dozens of the crews were killed. Waste storages and all related equipment, including waste collection vehicles, were also destroyed in the war and completely paralyzed.
Israeli forces targeted several vehicles used to remove the rubbish, as you can see over there. This left us paralyzed in handling the tremendous amounts of the rubbish left by the displaced people crammed in the central area. We demand that all international bodies help by providing us with the needed equipment and vehicles.
Not only did the deliberate Israeli attacks against the municipalities cause this crisis, but Israeli prevention of delivery of fuel needed to operate the vehicles and equipment worsened the problem. This caused rubbish and waste to pile up on the streets and in shelters.
This is a big problem we have been suffering from since the beginning of the war on Gaza. The rubbish is scattered everywhere in the vicinity of the hospital, which causes a lot of diseases for people, particularly the children.
Infectious diseases are ravaging Palestinians in war-torn Gaza as the health system collapsed by the war. And dire conditions and scarcity of food and clean water have set off a public health crisis. The Gaza Health Ministry, alongside many international organizations, has called for an end to the catastrophe that is looming in terms of the infectious diseases that began to spread on a wide scale among the displaced Palestinians. Hundreds of thousands of those people, mostly women and children, were now diagnosed with contagious diseases like hepatitis and intestinal diseases.
More than 150 days of this war led to mass displacement of the people who crammed in the evacuation centers without having a real access to the hygiene and cleanliness. This caused a lot of infectious diseases, particularly among the children. Needless to mention the severe shortage of the medical supplies and assistance amid the overwhelming number of injuries inflicted by the Israeli attacks.
Months-long incessant Israeli bombardments have put the vast majority of the health facilities out of service. This as limited sanitation facilities and overcrowding shelters are causing the spread of disease and keeping Gazans from recovering. It's another dark side of the deep catastrophe that still afflicts the Palestinian people as a result of the ongoing apocalyptic Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. While the outcries of the Palestinian civilians are still unanswered and muted by the American veto. Abu Musabbih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
Discussing legal avenues to stop the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Adamant about finding a way to end the catastrophe in Gaza, Iran's Red Crescent Society brought together legal experts from 21 countries in Tehran to attend an international congress on the occupation of Palestine, with a special focus on Israeli violations of international humanitarian law.
Today, what's happening in Gaza is beyond words. Terms such as war crimes are simply not enough to describe what the Zionists are doing. It's been over 5 months, and more than 30,000 people have been killed. The least Muslim countries can do is completely cut off their ties and trade with the Zionists.
A stance that was reiterated by every single speaker of the conference.
Legal experts have been voicing their support for Palestinians. What is happening in Gaza is against everything we know to be the pillars of modern society, violating the Geneva Convention, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and international humanitarian law.
The Universal Declaration of Human Rights and international humanitarian law clearly gives the right to Palestinians. The Israelis are violating the Geneva Convention day in and day out. They should be held accountable for all these crimes in an international tribunal.
We're very clear that the United Nations, the Security Council, at this stance is politicized.
So far, calls to allow food distribution in Gaza have been denied, and there have been numerous warnings against a looming famine. With more than 40,000 online participants from different cities in Iran and around the world, the call for change can be clearly heard.
The participants are demanding accountability. They say today the same countries that wrote the Geneva Convention and the international organizations that claim to be advocates of human rights are silent in the face of Israeli atrocities in Gaza. However, with public opinion shifting against the Israeli regime, this conference could be a first step in creating the kind of change the international community wants to see. Gizum Shahmadi, Tehran.
The right to speak out, to protest, the very fabric of democratic rights, once again under attack in the UK, as the government updates its definition of extremism and is about to introduce a potential ban on parliamentarians joining protests. Recommendations from the government's advisor on political violence, John Woodcock, also known as Lord Walney, who is a former chair of Labour Friends of Israel, call on leaders of the mainstream political parties to instruct their MPs to employ a zero-tolerance approach to groups that use disruptive tactics or fail to stop, quote, hate on marches. In the crosshairs, climate activist groups such as Extinction Rebellion and Palestine Solidarity Campaign, who have organized the enormous peaceful mobilizations for Gaza since October last year.
This is an affront to
democracy and an indication of a weak and decaying government's descent into authoritarianism. It's totally out of touch with the British people and actually very much out of keeping with the British values that they claim to champion.
Ahead of Walney's recommendations, and after the by-election in Rochdale, Greater Manchester, that handed pro-Palestine campaigner George Galloway a thumping victory, a speech by the Prime Minister vilifying the pro-Palestinian protests demanding a ceasefire in Gaza.
In recent weeks and months, we have seen a shocking increase in extremist disruption and criminality. What started as protests on our streets has descended into intimidation, threats, and planned acts of violence.
Critics say comments like those about peaceful demonstrations are a threat to the long tradition of freedom of protest and expression in the country.
His assertions are totally false. I mean, you know, the claims of an increase in anti-Semitism, of extremism, there is no evidence for that. I mean, this is just pure invention and another indication, frankly, of how weak this government really is. To have a special address to the nation as if there was some sort of state of emergency. Some people that spoke to me thought that we'd declared war on Russia. What it was George Galloway, the leader of the Workers' Party, getting elected as a Member of Parliament. I mean, that should be celebrated, not attacked in that way. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
The new changes are yet to be announced and legislated, but the political temperature is rapidly rising in the UK.
In its 2024 World Report, Human Rights Watch says that the UK government's practices and policies have severely curtailed domestic human rights protections. Others say the country is at risk of turning into a police state masquerading as a democracy. The question now is, how deep will those erosions go? And will the MPs in the building behind me allow them to continue? Saeed Purizap, London.
Iran has held a final round of a national moot court to stimulate taking proceedings against enforcers of unilateral sanctions and those who comply with them. The session was held by Iran's Institute of Judiciary in cooperation with the country's High Council for Human Rights in Tehran. Speaking at the event, the secretary of Iran's High Council for Human Rights, Kazem Gharibabadi, said that sanctions were considered weapons of war and even more destructive than a war due to their substantial impacts and being a collective punishment against a targeted country's people.
Undeniable rights cannot be ignored in sanctions, and implementing global peace and security cannot be possible without taking such rights into consideration. The legality of the legitimacy of sanctions is an important issue that the Security Council must consider in the discussion of imposing sanctions. Meanwhile, the international community has not yet accepted the legitimacy of unilateral sanctions.
Elena Duhan, UN Special Rapporteur on the negative impact of unilateral coercive measures on the enjoyment of human rights, also delivered a speech at the session via video conference.
In the situation of Iran, the most absurd cases refer to the impossibility to deliver bandages for EB patients from the only monopolist producer in Sweden, and similarly impossibility to deliver the medicine necessary for thalassemia patients suffering from some sort of autistic state, as well as some sort of psychological and physical diseases, especially if we are talking about the rare ones or the most severe ones. As a result, these are patients which are not directly designated by any type of sanctions, which are deprived of any possibility of access to health care system.
Meanwhile, speaking at the session, Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri-Kani said sanctions were the biggest crimes against humanity and were a collective punishment and proof that those who pursue and promote unilateralism do not respect human rights.
Iran is among the countries under the U.S. cruel sanctions, which is making efforts to restore the country's rights as a national duty. Sanctions arise from the international behavior and phenomena, and they disturb the future security and stability of the world. For a country which imposes sanctions, international law or human rights are not important.
Iran has been under U.S. sanctions for the past four decades. The sanctions intensified following the U.S. unilateral withdrawal from a 2015 nuclear deal in May 2018, formerly known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action.
Iranian authorities have repeatedly blamed the U.S. sanctions for shortage of medicines that treat special diseases like cancer. Health officials have warned that the harm caused by U.S. sanctions on Iran's access to pharmaceutical supplies may even get worse in the future. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Hezbollah's Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasem stressed the readiness of the Lebanese resistance to face any possible Israeli aggression against Lebanon. He said any Israeli act of aggression would trigger an advanced version of the 2006 war, when the Tel Aviv regime suffered a humiliating defeat at the hands of Hezbollah.
The Zionist enemy continues to threaten us with military aggression. We respond by means of steadfastness, resistance, and retaliatory strikes. We hereby declare that if they commit a foolish act and attack our territories, there would then be a new version of the July 2006 war.
He warned Israelis that Hezbollah would fight in an even more sophisticated manner in any future confrontation, stressing that the outcome will eventually be a victory for the resistance fighters. Sheikh Qasem was speaking at the 6th International Conference for the Union of Resistance Scholars in Lebanon's capital, Beirut. Representatives of the Palestinian resistance factions also stressed that the United States' all-out support for the Israeli warmongering policies has given a cover to the Israeli regime to continue its atrocities as its genocidal Gaza war has marked 150 days. Hamas official Osama Hamdan stressed that Muslim nations are duty-bound to foil U.S.-Israeli plots against war-torn Gaza.
It is the duty of Arabs and Muslims worldwide to take the initiative and foil Israel's conspiracy of starvation. The countries neighboring the Gaza Strip must not stand idly by and should take a concrete measure, especially for Gazans in the north.
Scholars and thinkers from diverse Muslim countries have come together to voice their support for the Palestinian people and the resistance. They sent a message of solidarity for Palestinians in war-torn Gaza as Israel's unbridled and unfazed brutality continues unabated.
50 scholars, top scholars from 25 countries, they are gathered here, and hopefully they will reach to any kind of the solution, kind of support and solidarity for the people.
The Palestinians are sending a very strong message. That look, you be answerable to this. You know, the accountability is not only in Israel who are the murderers, but accountability should also be the among the Muslims. Why are you not doing anything? So that's why Palestinians are giving that voice. They are struggling, they're saying they're going to fight to the end, and therefore they say if you want to help, it's your responsibility, it's not we appealing.
With the Israeli regime's genocidal war in Gaza now in its fifth month and over 30,000 civilian fatalities, scholars in Beirut assert that the resistance in the region has no choice but to continue its armed struggle until the final victory.
The Muslim clerics in support of the resistance have stressed through their discussions and meetings here in Beirut that the Palestinian cause is a reason for unity and solidarity. They say the teachings of the Quran have drawn a roadmap for supporting the Palestinian people in their struggle to free a land considered holy to all Muslims. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
A series of restrictions were imposed on the Yemeni economy following the U.S. redesignation of the Ansarullah movement as a terrorist group earlier this year. This blacklisting has had an impact on the humanitarian situation in the war-torn country, where millions of people are in dire need of aid.
Ansarullah as a political component has no external economic relations or companies in the private sector that have real weight in the national economy. The real goal of the resolution is to blackmail Ansarullah and distort their position in support of Gaza. The Yemeni economy has been in a state of siege for 9 years, and therefore the American measures putting pressure on the local economy we believe will not have much effect, especially since the Yemeni economy has withstood pressure over the past years and adapted to the measures imposed by the exiled Yemeni government in Riyadh. The Central Bank of Yemen will also work to impose procedures to secure the transfer of foreign exchange to and from Yemen.
Several international companies, including the money transfer company Western Union, have suspended their activities in Yemen, severely affecting the livelihoods of most Yemenis who rely on financial support from relatives abroad. Experts predict that such actions will lead to the creation of a black market for those benefiting from the suspension of money transfers.
The United States of America imposed collective punishment on the Yemeni people. Very important financial channels were stopped, such as Western Union, which is one of the most important money transfer networks in the world. And through it, Yemeni expatriates in American and European countries used to send money to their families in Yemen easily. We have 6 million expatriates outside the country and thousands of Yemeni families depend on them to provide a living. You can imagine what the situation will become after these financial transfers stop. The beneficiaries of this measure are black market workers who exploit these circumstances by deducing a percentage of their remittances and transfer them through illegal channels.
In an effort to deter Yemen's naval operations against vessels linked to the United States, the United Kingdom, and Israel in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden, the U.S. Department of State blacklisted the Ansarullah movement as a specially designated global terrorist group. However, this designation has primarily affected the humanitarian situation, as members of the Ansarullah movement have no investments abroad.
Observers believe that Washington's recent measures are aimed at inciting the Yemeni people to take to the streets in opposition to the Ansarullah movement as a strategic move to undermine the group's popularity in the country. But that plot does not look like it will succeed, given the widespread support for Ansarullah in Yemen. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
In the limelight.
The Ukraine war is giving NATO countries the chance to test their advanced weaponry on an actual battlefield. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Washington Post has covered this story and tells us more. U.S. military planners are using the Ukraine war as an active and bountiful research opportunity to prepare for a conflict with more sophisticated rivals such as Russia or China. The Washington Post cited a classified year-long study on the lessons learned from both sides of the bloody campaign, saying it will help inform the next national defense strategy, a sweeping document that aligns the Pentagon's myriad priorities. The Washington Post said the study was led by 20 officers who examined 5 areas: ground maneuver, air power, information warfare, sustaining and growing forces, and long-range fire capability. A senior unnamed military official told the Washington Post, "We immersed them in this conflict to make sure that they were understanding the implications for warfare." Another official said, "The lessons taken from Ukraine stand to be an enduring resource. Ukraine has demonstrated that everything US troops do in the field, from planning missions and patrolling to the technology that enables virtually every military task, needs to be rethought." Washington and its NATO partners have viewed Ukraine as a proxy war to weaken Russia. While the Biden administration has touted this policy, as for Ukraine, it has severely harmed the country. In the early months of the war, Kiev nearly reached an agreement with Moscow to end the conflict, and Russian forces would withdraw to the pre-invasion lines. However, Washington and London pressured the Ukrainian leadership to abandon that diplomatic path. Since then, Russia has achieved victories and is advancing in key areas along the battlefront. Ukraine is struggling to arm its forces and has suffered 500,000 casualties. Recently, the war has escalated to attacks on cities, while Ukraine has suffered substantial infrastructure damage. Last week, Russia achieved its first major territorial success in more than 9 months in the war, capturing the eastern Ukrainian city of Avdiivka. A soldier who escaped the city told the Associated Press that the Ukrainians were outnumbered 5-1. One Ukrainian told the Associated Press news agency of Kiev's increasingly aggressive conscription policy. He lamented, "It's a feeling that everyone wants to throw you into a meat grinder." Recently, the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, described the situation on the battlefront as extremely difficult due to delayed Western supplies of military aid. Meanwhile, more than 6 million Ukrainians who took refuge in Europe, the United States and Canada after the war broke out in February of 2022 worry whether they will ever be allowed to settle in the long term. With no end to the war in sight, governments that offered them short-term help now face a much bigger bill than they expected and are looking to control the spending. But Western arms manufacturers are reaping exorbitant profits from the prolongation of the Ukraine war. American weaponry sales overseas rose sharply last year, reaching a record total of $238 billion. The State Department reported the U.S. government directly negotiated $81 billion in sales, a 56% increase compared to 2022. The rest were direct sales by the U.S. military companies to foreign nations. Ukraine's neighbor Poland, currently on a drive to expand its military, made some of the biggest purchases to a tune of $30 billion from the United States. On Wednesday, British arms maker British Aerospace Systems reported record profit of £25.3 billion in 2023 amid the ongoing wars in Ukraine and Gaza. British newspaper The Financial Times has also covered the same story and tells us more. Ukraine's war with Russia is giving NATO countries the chance to test their advanced weaponry on an actual battlefield, and they're gaining valuable insight as a result. NATO members, including the United States, Canada, Britain, Germany and France, have been giving Ukraine weapons and training since Russia launched its special operation in February of 2022. And the kinds of weaponry they have handed over have become increasingly advanced since the war began, with Ukraine pushing for modern tanks, air defense systems and aircraft. The Ukrainian defense minister told the Financial Times that because of this, Ukraine's allies can actually see if their weapons work on a battlefield, how efficient they work and if they need to be upgraded. The Ukrainian defense minister said, "For the military industry of the world, you can't invent a better testing ground." Petro Pyatakov, a retired colonel who is now a consultant for the arms industry, told the Financial Times that there was an active interest from Western artillery manufacturers in receiving feedback from Ukrainian gunners to supposedly eliminate shortcomings. He said that the fighting in Ukraine has exposed some issues. "It has become apparent during operations that these systems were not intended for such intense warfare." A German defense contractor also told the outlet that they had learnt really a lot from the soldiers in Ukraine, who once they noticed something, suggested and our software engineers sit down so that they can have an update. Meanwhile, Jack Watling, from the London-based think tank, the Royal United Services Institute, told the Financial Times that the fighting in Ukraine had also given the West new information about how Russian weaponry worked. But he warned that the West has exposed a lot of its own capabilities to Russia and China, and therefore will have to change the ways that some of its equipment work in order to retain competitive advantage.
option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello, welcome to The Spotlight. I'm Kaba Tapwai. What's happening in the Gaza Strip is reminiscent of the starved Yemeni children, a war that was backed and supported by the U.S. In the Gaza Strip, Palestinians are dying of hunger, especially children, in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. 500,000 Palestinians are fighting for their lives from starvation. There now is no doubt that Israel, backed by the U.S., is using food as a weapon of war, a war crime in itself. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how systematically Israel is ethnically cleansing Palestinians, even though there is a ceasefire agreement that is being discussed, although chances of that is very thin. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Mohamed Abu Saida is a professor of political science at Al-Azhar University who joins us from Cairo. Also joining us is Daniel Shaw, academic and commentator who joins us from New York.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome. It's another grim day for the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, but we're looking at the starvation factor here. 2.4 million Palestinians, roughly. Mohamed Abu Saida, I'm going to start with you first. Of which 500,000 are fighting for their lives due to starvation. The food insecurity obviously engulfs the entire population. UNRWA has said it has not been able to deliver food in over a month. There is aid going in, but not only does it not reach the Palestinians, when it does, they get killed in the process. Do you think that Israel is using food as a weapon, which is a war crime in itself, against the Palestinian population?
Well, the quick answer to your question is yes. This is what Israel has been doing for the past 5 months, especially against the Palestinians who are stuck and trapped in the north of Gaza, who did not leave at the beginning of this war 5 months ago, and now they are very much trapped and stuck in the north of Gaza. And very much Israel doesn't allow humanitarian assistance and food to reach to the north of the Gaza Strip. And to the best of my knowledge, some Palestinians have died as a result of hunger. And also many hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in the north of Gaza are eating animals' food. They have been eating tree leaves to try to survive. The situation there is very catastrophic. I have two brothers who are still based in the north of Gaza. Sometimes I talk to them whenever there are communications with them, mobile communications. The situation is more than catastrophic. more than tragic. One simple reason, Israel is very much using hunger and starvation as a weapon to try to drive the Palestinians from the north back to the south, even though it's been 5 months since Israel has started this military operation against the Palestinians in Gaza. It seems to me that Israel is still insisting on evacuating the north of Gaza from the Palestinians and drive them to the south, even though their life or their livelihood in the south is not going to be better. Roughly 1.5 million Palestinians in Rafah in the south of Gaza are also facing death and facing Israeli pounding day after day. It's a very catastrophic situation, and the least I can say about that, what the International Court of Justice said about a month ago, what Israel is doing, there is a plausible reason to believe that Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza. That's the least that can be said about what is happening now.
Did you say that you have two brothers that are in the north of the Gaza Strip?
Yes, I do have two brothers with their families are still in the north of Gaza, yes.
All right, we're going to get into that a little bit because that's where the core of the 500,000 Palestinians who are dying of starvation is. But Daniel Shah, when you take a look at what Israel is doing, another prevention are the aid trucks. There are roughly 2,000 aid trucks that are at the crossings that are not being allowed to get into the Gaza Strip. And if there are aid trucks that are going into the Gaza Strip, they target the aid trucks where the most recent one, where two occasions of massacres happened, but the one that caught the world's attention, that's now being labeled as the Flower Massacre. Bullets were discovered on the ones that were killed. What is the story with that? Why would they do that, do you think?
Colonialism is humiliation. Colonialism is complete control. It was with French colonialism in Algeria. It was with the British and Dutch Afrikaners in South Africa. It was with the U.S. Attacks against Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, the dirty war against Syria, the sanctions against Iran and Venezuela. And it's no different with Israeli Zionism against the Palestinian people since 1948. It's been a long, slow, and now accelerated process of ethnic cleansing, of apartheid. The fact that we have to even say these words out loud in 2024, it harkens back to 1492 and to 1620 when the pilgrims first massacred the Wampanoags. And to think that so many of our people across the United States, across the quote-unquote Western world, still stand on the side of colonialism, white supremacy, and Zionism is unconscionable for me. You know, the Holocaust is being televised. The genocide is being televised. There's no excuse to not look at alternative sources of information. We know that the Zionists have done everything to control the narrative over this. And when we make that point, they accuse us of anti-Semitic tropes for telling the truth. But the point is that the mainstream media, from CNN to Fox to the New York Times, is completely complicit in this genocide, and history is recording this.
Taking a look at what the U.S. Role is over here, let's go back to the most recent active role that the U.S. played when it comes to food, Mukhabir Abbasada, and that is the food drop that took place, airdropping and parachuting these parcels. 38,000, we understand, sandwiches and dates, I believe, and you're looking at the 500,000 that are dying of starvation with 2.4 million who are hungry. Why do you think the U.S. would do something like that, the ratio being so low in terms of the number of food parcels, knowing that there's so many that are dying as a result of starvation?
Well, that definitely is a very good question here. Well, let me say that I think the U.S. decided at the end of the day to airdrop food for the starving Palestinians in the Gaza Strip for two reasons. One is that the massacre that took place on the early morning of last Thursday, a week ago, which, as you mentioned, you refer to it as the flower massacre or the flower carnage that Israel was responsible for, that led to the death of more than 100 Palestinians and the injury of many hundreds of others. According to reports from the U.S., that the U.S. administration was not happy with the Israeli government that is not allowing food to reach to the north. So the U.S. decided to airdrop food, which didn't really mean a lot for the thousands of Palestinians who are hungry and starving in the north of Gaza. And second, I think it's more of like a PR campaign by the U.S. The U.S. Internally, among the American people who believe that this current administration led by President Joe Biden has done a very poor job when it comes to the Palestinians and helping the Palestinians who are facing death and starvation. And also, I think the U.S. is trying to improve its image among the region, among the residents of the Middle East region, who basically look at the U.S. as a partner and at least a complicit in this war of genocide against the Palestinians in Gaza. And I think the U.S. decided to do that to try to make itself look much better. But again, as you just mentioned, the amount of food which was dropped by the U.S. on areas of the Gaza Strip doesn't satisfy the minimum need of the hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who are hungry. And if they are not dying of Israeli pounding, they are, some of them are now dying of hunger and starvation.
All right, Daniel Shah, to dig deeper into this, you know, this is a very calculated move. This 38,000 figure, I don't think this figure just came out of the blue. I'm sure there were some who sat and analyzed the situation and figured out a number that needs to be airdropped, knowing full well that this is not going to meet the standards and the demand that's on the ground. Do you think that perhaps the U.S., in consultation with Israel, wants the starving Palestinians to be used as a tool in order to convince Hamas, you know, this truce talks or ceasefire talks that are happening, to convince Hamas to agree to this temporary ceasefire, that maybe it's using that as a tool?
Zionism, with full U.S. backing, is using any tools that they can. This is an informational war on Palestine, and it has been since 1948. Of course, it's a military war. They're now using starvation and dehydration on day 154 against 2.3 million civilians. And we don't hear the Zionists ever recognize, and they never will, the humanity of Palestinians. They label every single Palestinian baby, child, teenager, mother, elder, family member as Hamas, Hamas, Hamas. No one stopped to ask on the Zionist side, do the Palestinians have a right to defend themselves? They always talk about the Israeli right to violence and self-defense. Well, what about the oppressed? What about the occupied? What about the colonized? The world is fully awake, the Muslim world, the Arab world, the third world. But here I'm in New York City and across the United States. There's such a dictatorship over information, over the media. They pretend to believe in democracy, but they don't, because overwhelmingly, specifically among young people, this genocide is extremely unpopular. And now they're going after TikTok. They've threatened to come after our TikTok at Midwestern Marks and many other organizations. So I think the hypocrisy for them to talk about freedom of speech and freedom of press. And certainly this number of 38,000 meals is extremely paltry, but I think they're doing it too so they can try to cover their backsides and one day say, well, look, we had these airlifts, so we were not complicit in the starvation and Holocaust of the Palestinian people in Gaza.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
The problem is whether people are buying it or not. And Mukhabir Abu Saida, let me ask you this. Do you think people understand the scale of the involvement of the U.S. when it comes to this genocidal war? I mean, just the day before, the report came out that the U.S. has quietly approved and delivered more than 100 separate foreign military sales, amounting to thousands of precision-guided bombs, munitions, all kinds of bunker buster bombs, etc. I mean, this is the reason why, in one way, form, or another, there are starving Gazans. Okay? So the U.S. is complicit in that regard because of this military assistance to a large degree. What do you think about the fact that the U.S. has continually provided Israel with military assistance?
Well, of course the Palestinian people know about the U.S. role in this war. Of course the Palestinian people know that the U.S. is more than complicit. The U.S. in other ways is a partner to this Israeli killing and Israeli pounding of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And I can tell you for a number of reasons. First, the U.S. has used its veto power three times. Since the start of this war on October 7th until now, the U.S. has used its veto power three times to block any U.N. resolution at the U.N. Security Council to reach an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and put an end to this Israeli genocide and Israeli killing of the Palestinians. Second, from the beginning of this war, Israel deployed its warplane carriers in the Mediterranean to try to deter other countries or other non-state actors to get involved in this war between Israel and the Palestinian resistance. And also, as you just mentioned, the U.S. has also supplied Israel with a lot of weaponry. Ships and airplanes full of ammunition and weapons have been provided to Israel over the past 5 months. And in addition to that, the U.S. is repeating day after day that Israel has the right to defend itself. Israel has the right to defend itself. Israel has the right to do whatever it finds it. I mean, lately we just started to hear that the U.S. Patience with Netanyahu and the right wing in Israel is fading away as a result of extreme right-wing policies by Netanyahu's partner in this government. But yes, the Palestinian people, they are aware of the fact that the U.S. has been helping Israel politically, economically, and militarily. And it's, I mean, in the age of social media and the age of information revolution, I think you cannot really hide what the U.S. has been doing. Not during this war, but even before the war erupted, or before this war erupted in October 7th.
The ceasefire talks that are taking place, which are hanging by a thread, Daniel Shah, has a lot of sticking points and divisive issues in it. One of them is the request by Hamas for this to be a permanent ceasefire, but yet Israel and the U.S. are adamant about it being a partial ceasefire, not a permanent one. Why is there such an insistence on that, do you think, by the U.S. side?
Yeah, one is left to wonder. I mean, the U.S. government has the highly paid intelligence experts who are monitoring 25 hours per day, 8 days a week, everything that goes on, not just in Palestine, but in Ukraine and Taiwan and Guyana, and always waging these proxy wars. Why would they want an all-out genocide of an indigenous people of the Middle East on Biden's record, on the U.S. government's record? Well, that's because whether it's Biden or I think Trump to a lesser extent, liberalism is hegemony. And liberalism corresponds to the needs and the profits of the Lockheed Martins, of the general dynamics of these massive military corporations. That's why you have 100 secret weapon sales. That's why they're trying to push forward $14 billion more for the Israeli General Sidez, and then for the proxy war, $60 million more, even though it's still been caught up in the House of Representatives. And to be demanding a ceasefire after 154 days of genocide, I mean, this is not an outlandish demand. This is really asking for crumbs. I mean, humanity is asking for the Palestinians to have a place to breathe. Humanity is asking for a Palestinian state and Palestinian self-determination. So the fact that we can't even get ceasefire, even though we have millions of people mobilized across Western Europe, across Africa, across New York City, the entire world is standing up against the U.S. and Israeli axis of genocide and demanding justice. The fact that they are continue to ignore us shows you how unpopular the U.S. government is in the world. And this is going to have a colonial boomerang of violence effect in the upcoming days, months, and years. Who could ever trust the Israelis again? Just when the Israelis were thought that they could sit down with the Saudis and with other neighbors, the Israelis have shown just how unneighborly and genocidal they are.
Israel's economy is not doing well. Mukhabir Abu Masada, just to change gears here, and we're looking at a warning to the Prime Minister Netanyahu by the U.S. Treasury Secretary, who told him, listen, you got to make sure that the economy in the West Bank is going to flow, that it's not going to tank. This is pretty interesting, because if it's issuing that warning to Netanyahu, doesn't that mean that if the West Bank falls apart and goes into the direction of the Gaza Strip, which at this point is in crisis levels now, with the killings and the abductions, etc., don't you think that that poses an existential threat to Israel when its economy is not doing well and the West Bank economy is teetering on that as well?
Well, what I can tell you about that is that the U.S. is trying to do its best to stabilize the West Bank and to keep also Jerusalem, East Jerusalem, under control. The last thing that the U.S. and Israel would like to see, especially during the month of Ramadan, which is approaching in a few days, is instability in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, which, by the way, Israel is sometimes trying to provoke the Palestinians through its incursions and into West Bank cities like Jenin, Nablus, and other Palestinian cities, trying to provoke the Palestinians into a new intifada or an eruption of violence against Israel. And as a